Hi everybody, welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. My name's Rob from robnonphoto.com and this is my little audio diary of my journey through the world of photography. I hope everybody's had a great week. Once again, I'm recording the podcast on my way to work. It's Monday morning, it's 7:26 and the weather looks okay. We've had a little bit of sunshine this week. I've been hard at work. I've worked 6 days this week, so I haven't had really much time to go out shooting. On Thursday, we were down the allotment, me and Suzanne. Did some more digging with my new rotavator, my new petrol rotavator, which sounds like a two-stroke motorbike as I sort of carved my way into the earth to turn it all over to get it ready for planting, which is great fun. And whenever I'm down the allotment, I always make sure I've got at least one of my cameras with me, because one of my projects for 2011 is self-developed photos from the allotment. But obviously, because I'm shooting film down there, I've kind of got nothing to show you. But if you go to, if you had a look at my Flickr photo stream recently, you'll remember last week I talked about using some old expired Jessup's Pan 100 black and white film that I found inside a bulk loader. And I think I just developed it at the weekend and I was taking it into work to scan it to see what came out. And initially when I scanned it at work, I thought, oh no, it's all rubbish. Well, sorry, when I looked at the negatives, I thought, oh right, they look okay. And then when I scanned it at work, I thought, oh no, they're all rubbish. There was no contrast, you know, there was too many light leaks, and it just looked awful. However, when I actually sat down that night and looked through the photos on my PC with the images quite large, some of them are actually quite nice, and there's a particularly ethereal one, I guess that's a word, ethereal one, of like a grave that I took in a graveyard in Fareham. I was using the Minolta SLT-101, and I think I was shooting at like f1.8 or f1.4 for a really shallow depth of field. And the combination of that short depth of field with this expired film that's, you know, fogged and got some light leaks on it, kind of made it look, makes it look really old and weird as well. So I was quite pleased with that. There's a couple of others. So if you go to my Flickr photo stream, or if you just go to robnonphoto.com and look for the show before this one, it's terrible. I don't even know what show I'm recording, because I think are we on 128 now? No, I can't. I can't remember. It will say the title of the podcast. If you go to the show before that in the show notes, or just go to robnonphoto.com, it'll probably still be on the first page if you listen to this around the. Around the 14th of March onwards, you'll see, I think I've put the grave picture up, and then there's a link to the rest of the shots. And what I've done is I've put some of that same film into my Trip 35 little film cameras I've been shooting with, that just to see what that comes up with, because I like the Trip 35 because it doesn't have a battery, it's fully automatic. All you've got to worry about is the distance to your subject, and it's got a nice sharp little lens, just to compare the two really. But I have ordered off eBay, I think, I don't know if it's the first time I've ordered a Minolta lens off eBay, but one of the things I was missing from my Minolta kit was I've got the beautiful 51.4 lens, which is obviously great for shallow depth of field, and it's a good all-around lens anyway. And I've got the 135 3.5 Minolta lens, which is good for telephoto portraits, and just gets you into the scene more. And I do have a little 28-70 Minolta zoom as well. But what I really wanted was a prime wide angle, like a 28. And I've actually bid on and won at a 28mm Minolta Rockall lens, so that should be coming this week. So as soon as I've got that, I'll probably load some more film into the SRT-101 and go out shooting some film with that. So that should be fun. And kind of relating to that, I was at work on Saturday and got a phone call off Suzanne. She said, I found you some stuff. And we have this little second-hand shop on the same road that we live on that's like a big... It's a cross between an Aladdin's cave and a junk store, but the guy who runs it is very nice, and we go in, he only opens it once a week, and we go in there, and we always have a route round, and Shane's in there all the time, you know, looking for stuff, and I always say, you know, have we got any cameras or anything, and that's the occasional thing. But over the past couple of months where I've been getting into film processing, you know, I said, look, have you got any old film lying around, or anything to do with that? And he said, well, he'd have a look, and I didn't really think much more of it, and I'd go in every couple of weeks and they'd say, oh no, I haven't got anything. But then Suzanne phoned me up and she went into the shop and And she probably says, I've got you a load of stuff, got you a load of film, and I've got you a dark room in a box as well. And I was like, what, a dark room in a box? She said, yeah, I've got you a dark room in a box. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you know, like a dark room in a box. It's quite a big box. And I was thinking, what's she talking about? Could it be like a dark bag? Yeah, well, when you're changing film and doing dinner stuff, you have these big black bags that you put your arms in, and you can work in the dark in there while you're sitting in the light yourself. And at work, for example, we have big dark boxes that are rigid. You put your arms in through these cuffs, these sort of nylon cuffs, and then you can work like that. So I thought maybe it's something like that. And then a box of various films. So Suzanne was really excited. And I was like, oh yeah, brilliant, cheers, Dan. But I wasn't really sure what it was. And so we got home Saturday night, had a quick look at Oliver's bike because it had a squeaky crank on it. And Suzanne said, come and have a look. Well, I got you. And I went in and there was this like A4... filing boxes, they're round about, slightly bigger than A4, made of cardboard, and you put papers inside, they didn't have a clip, and there was one of those, and I opened it up, and there was a load of 35mm film in there. There's probably about 8 or 10 rolls of 35mm film. I think it was from Click, which used to be, I don't know if they're still around, but they used to be like a film processing lab in the UK. All expired, all colour, but really, good stuff. So I thought, brilliant, there's also four or five rolls of 110 film. You know, the cartridge stuff that goes in the little cameras? So that's quite exciting. So I can look out for a 110 camera at the car boot now to shoot that through, and then I'd have to send it off to get it developed somewhere. There was also a packet of APS Advantix film. So that was cool, a three-pack. Again, it's all expired, but, expired film, great, especially colour film, good to shoot with because you get these funny colour shifts sometimes, or most of the time it just shoots great anyway. And then there was two little cameras in this box as well. There was like there's a little APS camera, and then there's this Olympus Mu Panorama. So you know I've got the Olympus Mu 2 or Stylus Epic, which is the little super sharp one with the 28mm 2.8 lens on it. Well, it's a similar sort of thing, but it's got a 35mm 3.5 lens on it, no zoom, but it has a switch on the back that you flick over, and two little, I guess you'd call them frames, drop down inside the camera to turn the 35mm view into a panorama view, just like that little red cheap toy plastic panorama camera I got from the Isle of Wight a few months ago, and I sort of talked about it. So I was quite excited about that, and I put some batteries in it. And tried to load some film in it. And although it turns on and seems to, and it takes photos and stuff, I think that the wind motor is broken. Because normally with these little epics, these little news, when you load film into them, you kind of push the header into the back of the film, and there's like a little arrow that tells you where to do it. And then you normally close the back, and it goes, and it loads the film automatically. But this one isn't. It's just sort of kind of sitting there and not making any noise. So I think maybe that motor's broken on it. But I'm going to take it into work today and blow it out with a little bit of compressed air and see if there's like a sensor that's gone dirty or something. Because if it does work, that'd be great, because I'll be able to shoot panoramas. And the advantage of this camera over the toy one is that this one has, worked out exposure properly. So, it knows it's got 200 ISO film in there. And it'll adjust the aperture and shutter speed accordingly to get a well-exposed shot. With the little plastic toy camera, it wasn't. There was one shutter speed, one aperture, and you kind of had to adjust the exposure in post-processing, which basically meant things would could get very grainy indeed if you were trying to lighten up an image. So that was cool. And then there was this other thing, this other box, this darkroom in a box. And I looked and I almost fell over. It is a Patterson colour darkroom kit, okay, from about 1982. It looks like it's been used maybe once, if that at all. And what it comprises of, everything you need to develop and print colour photographs. I was amazed. So open it up, and it's all in the box, all pristine condition. I don't think it's ever been used. I think all that's happened is the chemicals have been taken out, and that's it, because I couldn't see it. Everything looks brand new, and all the instructions are in it. So it consists of an enlarger, so that's that big kind of thing that looks like a huge microscope that you put on a desk, and you put your negs in it, and it shines a light through onto a piece of photographic paper, and you make proper prints with it. So it's got one of them, a nice big one, a colour one as well, so it has all these coloured filters in the top of it that when you want to do colour adjustments, adjust the colour balance on your photos, you can kind of slide different colours into place. So that looks quite funky. But I'm pretty sure you can use them for black and white as well, so that's good. It comes with all of these different size easels that you put your paper in underneath it when you're doing your photos. It comes with like this thing, apparently when you're doing, when you're printing your own photos, you create a test print first for each roll of film or batch of photos. And what you do is you use the enlarger to shine the light on a piece of photographic paper that's covered in like this piece of plastic that's separated into strips. And what you do is you leave the light on the enlarger, and then you flick these strips up one at a time, so part of the film, part of the paper's exposed for like 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15, 20. So you can see what the best exposure time is for that particular combination of paper and negative and enlarger. But to go back a couple of steps as well, what it also has is there's a Patterson tank in there, and thermometers and mixing graduated cylinders and little mixing bowls for doing all your colour chemicals in there. There's a chemical mixing rod. I think there's two thermometers. There's this special thing that you can use for making contact prints, so you can load your negatives into it and put it on top of a piece of paper, and you can sort of do one photo with all your negatives on, so that's pretty cool. So it's got all the kit to develop your coloured neg, apart from the chemicals, and then you have the enlarger for making your prints, and then there's this it's the developer for the paper, because the idea is that you the only bit that you really do in the dark, well, you can do them in dark bags or other bits, but when you want to, you shine the light on the paper in the enlarger in the dark, and then you turn the light off, and then you take the paper out of the enlarger, and then you put it into this rotary tank thing, and it looks a bit like how can I describe it? Yeah, if you know when you go to parties sometimes at people's houses, and they'll have all the nuts and pretzels and watsits and crisps in like a big round dish that's in partitions that spins round. It's like that with a lid on it and with the base so it can spin round. And what you do is you put the paper in, and then you put the lid on so it's all light sealed, and then you pour your chemicals in and spin this thing around, and it develops your photos, it develops your prints without streaks and stuff like that. So that looks pretty cool, and it's got other little things like clips for hanging your negs up and stuff. And there's all the instructions in the world, and all these little conversion charts for different temperatures and how to work out exposure. And there's this big wall chart that's got different pictures, well, the same picture but with different colour casts on it, so you can work out what kind of filter you need to add in the enlarger. So all very exciting, and all in a box. And there's a clock as well for timing everything. It all looks really cool. Can't wait to have a play with it. I guess all I really need is some photographic paper, and I can have a go at doing black and white prints using the enlarger. Cool. And then the instructions are actually very good, and it describes how you develop colour negs as well. And that actually seems quite simple. The only thing that seems to be, you have to be a little bit more careful about is the temperature of everything. It seems you have to be, well, I guess you have to be careful with black and white as well. But I think if your temperature is inaccurate with the chemicals in colour, obviously your colours go wrong in your necks and everything can look a bit weird. But I don't think that would bother me, to be honest, because I quite like looking weird-looking colours in photos and oddness and things that isn't like reality. I think that's kind of the way I'm going a lot of the time with my photo. You know, my black and whites are very contrasty or non-contrasty with this expired film I've been using recently. So there we go. So I've now got a Patterson home colour negative and printmaking kit. That all it needs is some paper and some chemicals if I want to do colour. But as I said, I'll probably do some black and white prints first through it. So I'm going to look out at work and maybe order some, see what the cheapest photographic paper is we do, get it in. And then I can't decide if I'm going to work out a way to temporarily black out our dining room or the garage, because it's getting warmer now, and I could probably stay out in the garage and do it out there. That might be a little bit, I don't think Suzanne would be too chuffed if I spilt a load of chemicals on our carpet if I was doing things in the dining room. Well chuffed, well pleased. Thank you very much, Suzanne, for finding that for me. And I was looking up there's a few sites that describe it and stuff, and how expensive these things were when they were new. And like back in 1982, 1983, these things were like £150, and that was loads of money back then. I mean, it's still loads of money now. So, and I think Suzanne paid £15 for everything. So for this Patterson colour developing and enlarging kit, and you know, a load of 35mm film. So yeah, all excitement, eh? So there we go. That's really it for me this week. I haven't really got much more to talk about. Condolences to our friends over in Japan, and the video that's been coming out from there is absolutely horrifying. And if anybody's over there who's got relatives or friends, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with you, and to the people in New Zealand as well. A couple of weeks before that. I'd also like to mention the fact that SEL is actually part of the tech podcast network. So if you like listening to podcasts like Twit or This Week in Google, or things that just talk about technology news a lot, the tech podcast network over at techpodcast.com, I think it's techpodcast.com, there'll be a link in the show notes, is really good. They're not that big on photography podcasts. I think there's another couple apart from mine. But they're really good for all the other stuff, and there's a couple I listen to that are great fun. And so if you've got the time, whip over to techpodcasts.com and have a look at some of the other podcasts and subscribe. All that remains is for me to thank everybody for taking part in the Flickr group, adding their photos for the pool as ever. There's excuse me. There's great work going over there. Thanks everybody for commenting on robnumphoto.com, and especially everybody who sends me emails. I love getting emails with questions or comments or invitations to look at photographs and stuff like that. It really makes my day when I see things like that. It makes, you know, I feel like I'm getting closer and getting to know a lot of the listeners when I can look at their photos on various sites, not just on Flickr but other places, and I really enjoy it. But most of all, thanks to you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robnumphoto.com. Remember, you can email me, scalespeeder@gmail.com. That's scalespeeder@gmail.com. Or if you go to robnumphoto.com, robnunphoto.com, there's a contact link there as well. So, yeah, my name's Rob from robnumphoto.com, and hopefully, pretty soon, I'll see you on Flickr.